Welcome to Parents Perspective. All right, Paul crowed, giving his pal Wardell an enthusiastic high five. Today you're the man. Let's go. You got that one, beamed Wardell. Got the keys, got the card, we're out of here. Both boys hopped into Wardell's dad's car and sped off, tires squealing. Let's get Marv and BJ, suggested Paul. I know they're cool with it. We're rolling, replied Wardell. Now that I got my wheels, we got cool days and sweet partying ahead. From a parent's perspective, what can we do to make our children's rites of passage less risky and more productive? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest works on such issues with children, adolescents, and adults. Dr. Kevin Williams completed training in adult psychiatry, business school, and child and adolescent psychiatry as well. He also enjoys teaching and helping to establish youth entrepreneurship programs. He currently serves on a congressional subcommittee to explore and put forth best practices to help stem the tide of negative outcomes for African-American males. Dr. Williams practices child, adolescent, and adult psychiatry in Bethesda, Maryland. He is the father of an almost 6-year-old son and a 10-year-old daughter. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Dr. Williams.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
What do you see as some common rites of passage for American kids?
I think common rites of passage today represent different things than they did when that term was coined. There was a man named Van Gennep who basically was the first one to coin the phrase rites of passage. And his contained three components that many of the what we call rites of passage today don't really contain. So his three were, number one, separation from the community. Number two, being pushed to your limit while out and separate from the community, and then being returned to the community. Those were ways that the community could easily mark a time when a child transitioned from one stage to the next. And I think today we have sort of a 20th century rite of passage environment where things like getting your driver's license, you know, becoming of drinking age, getting your military draft card, high school graduations, even junior high and elementary school graduations are more seen as our rites of passage. And I think that it's appropriate for what's going on today that we look at those things. But I think that in a much more significant way, I think we're losing out on a lot by not having some of those more formal rites of passage as a part of our everyday lives.
Dr. Williams, how can parents help make these rites of passage positive ways of affirmation within the family?
I think that probably the best way to make them positive is for the parents to actually not only anticipate them, but prepare their children for them. So, for example, I see a lot of times now that parents are actually celebrating even elementary school graduations with their children, which I think is a great thing because there are actually three things in life that are certain: death, taxes, and change. There are a lot of children who just are not prepared for change. And I've seen kids who've been in private schools, for example, from kindergarten through eighth grade or kindergarten through 12th grade. When it comes time to separate from that core group, they are literally, you know, just depressed. Even I had a recent client who was suicidal for a very short period of time. And I think that ways that we can help our children are to let them know that change is a part of life, to prepare them for the changes.
Are there some suggestions that you have of things that parents can do? I mean, the elementary school graduation celebration is a good one. Are there other things that come to mind that we should keep in mind as parents?
I think that the more traditional organizations that we can get our children involved in, the better. Because I see that our pop culture is basically kind of defining our rites of passage these days. So some of the more traditional rites of passage ceremonies have been through our various religious groups. For example, in the Baptist community, they have baptism. And that occurs after the child is of an age of consent and understanding so that they know what it means to accept Christ as their Savior. In the Catholic tradition, they have a christening soon after birth, but the first communion comes after many CCD classes later on in life where they gain that education and information. And probably the most intensive of which is the Jewish community. They have bar mitzvahs for boys, bat mitzvahs for girls, and in preparation for that, they learn to read the Hebrew text in Hebrew. And so they have many years and a lot of preparation to support that day. And in all of these religions, they have formal discussions of what it means to live your life every day as a practitioner of that faith. And that allows children to be led, that allows children a path. If you kind of think about it like ants, they lay down trails so that the other ants don't have to make as many decisions. They get what they need, they follow the trail to safety, back to home. Without those trails, the ants get lost. I think that if we can maintain connections to our religious and ethnic backgrounds, that many of those connections have in them rites of passage ceremonies that we can continue.
There's a friend of my youngest son who is Zoroastrian, and he had his rites of passage, which looked very much like a mini bar mitzvah in terms of what he was required to do, memorize and perform and so forth within that community, very young. He was quite young when he had to do all these tricks, and the kids were, of course, very impressed with what he could do. But does it count as a rite of passage when a child is quite young?
Absolutely. If our children can become more autonomous early on by realizing that they have power, they can have control, they can understand that at age 3, I'm a bigger boy than I was at age 2. And even birthday celebrations can be examples of rites of passage. So you're 3 years old now, you're a bigger boy than you were at 2, and with that additional age comes additional responsibilities, but also additional benefits. You get to do something that you didn't get to do at 2. Now, there might not be a huge difference between 2 and 3, but there can be at 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 and 9 and 10. You know, as we get older, each birthday can be occasion for a family to celebrate a sort of rite of passage by kind of changing the relationship that you have with your children. And again, the ability to handle change is one of the greatest gifts that we can give our children. And if we can have them do that with the emotional security that they realize that, they have some control, they have some benefits, they have some autonomy, they'll be stronger and better for it.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on rites of passage.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, an excellent book by authors Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Kevin Williams about rites of passage in our children's lives.
Dr. Williams, in addition to religious rites of passage, what other areas might we know of?
A lot of communities have rites of passage, and they can be ethnic communities. They can even be socioeconomic. For example, in the Hispanic community, there's a Sweet 16 celebration. It can be a very lavish, very wonderful celebration. And with that, comes a change in how the family relates to this girl of 16. Even social economic groups, for example, debutante balls, were seen as rites of passage for the affluent. But now, in our 20th century, I think those celebrations are definitely being brought down to lower socioeconomic classes. I know of an inner city church in Connecticut that's basically preparing the boys to be the partners for the debutantes. And so they're using it not only as an opportunity to train the girls on how to be ladies, but they're training the boys on how to be gentlemen. And they, you know, cover several months of really kind of formalized, you know, education around this to prepare them.
That's pretty impressive.
Right. And even I know of an organization in the African-American community called Jack and Jill. And it is for middle to upper middle class African-Americans who, because they are now living in the suburbs and not in areas with a high concentration of African-Americans, this is an organization that allows them to get a sense of community, and they meet and have things similar to the debutante balls, you know, for their children, and it allows them to maintain that ethnic closeness.
What would you say some negative landmarks are that our kids might face?
I think that one of the most striking negative landmarks now that kids are facing are the gangs. And it was really interesting to me when I found the Gannett quote that the three components of his rites of passage are absolutely incorporated in the gang rituals. And I doubt if they read Van Gennep. Separation from the community. They take the kids. They physically take them away from their parents for a little while. They're being put, the number two, is they're being pushed beyond their limit. So absolutely, as a part of a lot of the gangs, they have literally beatdowns as a part of entrance into the gang. Number three, they're returned to the community, now a changed person. But unfortunately, it's changed to the negative. But a lot of the positives, if you want to say that in quotes, about being in a community like that are, you know, protection, our order, our sense of community. You know, even though it's clearly in a negative environment, those are things that all kids want. They want protection. They want a sense of order in their lives. They want community. And I actually have the benefit of working in a wide variety of socioeconomic areas, and I actually asked whether affluent family about gang involvement once, and sometimes I kind of say it a little facetiously, thinking that there aren't really gangs in the affluent communities. And the mom responded, "Oh, you know, it's really hard getting into gangs. You know, they run out of the dye lot for the rags really quickly, you know, the interest fees are really high, you know." It was kind of funny. But in some of the, even the affluent communities, I have found that there are these little kind of clandestine gangs that actually go around and, you know, do a lot of the kind of thug life-ish behaviors, you know, beating kids down and stealing and drug abuse. So it's not merely a social economic entity anymore. Kids are looking for belonging. Kids are looking for a sense of community. Kids are looking for a transition from young to older. So if it's, you know, seen as a positive thing to transition from a child to a gang member, they're going to do it. And even other behaviors, like risk-taking behaviors. I see a lot of kids, you know, involved in early sexuality. And to me, that is very much an example of early risk-taking behavior. You know, sex before you're ready has all sorts of negative consequences. It's really amazing to me that I see in some communities that actually having the baby is seen as a rite of passage, and that that then puts you into the club. And on the other side, fostering babies, plural, is seen as a rite of passage. And I just think that, you know, before you're really ready to properly rear a child, not just give birth to a child, it's a risky endeavor. You're not only putting your life at risk, you know, what you could become, but you're clearly placing your child at risk because of all the evidences we all know about how negatively that impacts a young child. I've even seen in some communities that what they call catching a bullet is seen as a rite of passage. So basically, you have to be shot and survive in order to be a part of the in crowd, or not necessarily a gang, but to be kind of accepted as a you know, kind of bona fide young man, and even tragically young woman these days, you have to be shot, you have to be arrested. It's really troubling. And it's not only troubling, but I just find it depressing at times.
It sounds very depressing. What do you think we as a society should be doing to try to help eliminate these negative rites of passage? It sounds like there's a lot of trouble in River City.
They're really overwhelming, what you just named.
I think that the more traditional organizations that we can get our children in, the better. And the Brownies that transition into Girl Scouts. Kids are in the Cub Scouts that transition into the Boy Scouts. There's much more than just the knot tying badge. All right. There's civil responsibility. There's respect for your elders. There's respect for education. There's respect for your own health. There's respect for religion embedded in these, you know, kind of classic organizations. And they're not the only ones. There are several fraternities and sororities that get involved with youth-based organizations. And I know of several schools that are now having after-school programs in which adults get involved with the lives of children other than their own.
So the idea is to give them a built-in community that espouses the values that we want them to have.
Absolutely.
Which is different than, it sounds to me, than a sports team or a drama group or something. We're saying something very different.
Right. You can get those things in the sports teams and the drama groups, but it depends on the coach. You absolutely have some spectacular coaches out there that teach all of those things. How to play, fair play, and not just fair play, but respect your body, respect your mind, respect education. Because, you know, sports, let's face it, it's not just a physical entity. You actually really have to learn the intricacies of the sport to be great at it. And you also have to pay attention to your education with the good coaches.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on rites of passage.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $10 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Kevin Williams about rites of passage in our children's lives.
We as parents just have to absolutely pay much closer attention to what's filling our children's time and mind. We should absolutely be involved with community organizations that provide the support and the positive rites of passage components for our children.
Such as?
Not just going to church on Sunday, but being a part of the youth ministry, being a part of the activities that the church gets into during the middle of the week or on Saturdays or
like
Sundays.
Community service.
Community service. Doing those things with your school, like making more time to be available to go on field trips with your children that are affiliated with your school. Getting involved in, even if it's just on a one or two time basis, with some of the programs that we mentioned earlier, like the Boy Scouts, the Girl Scouts, you know, you can help. You know, you don't have to be a den leader to be a great influence on some kids. Making time to come in and speak to children about what you do. There are so many occupations out there that just opening a child's mind to what you do could provide the stimulus for them to go in a whole new and wonderful direction for their life and to actually want to take part in school, want to take part in civic responsibilities just by the fellowship that you have with them.
So that's an example that you can provide just as a professional as whatever you do
right.
for your kid and other kids.
Absolutely.
This is beyond take your child to work day.
Right.
Right. Dr. Williams, how is our society preparing kids for these rites of passage?
Unfortunately, I think in the main, our society is poorly preparing our children for rites of passage. I think that the expectations of our culture kind of equate maturity with the acquisition of things like cars, and not just cars, but specific makes and models of cars, branding of everything from clothing to soft drinks, iPods, cell phones. Maturity and, you know, getting older is basically equivalent to getting more stuff, bigger, better, more expensive stuff. And I've recently heard a term called affluenza, as stated, as stated as a clinical psychiatric disease. And basically how I've come to identify that term is with parents who say, I've worked so hard in my life, I don't want my kids to have to work. And now that they're teenagers, their kids won't work. They're not working in school. They're not working at home. They're not preparing themselves to work in college. They're not preparing themselves for adulthood because we're giving them things. We're just basically supplying them constantly to, quote, keep them happy. Mm. Or, even worse, to keep them from tremendous outbursts of anger when they don't get it. So it's almost to pacify them. Mm-hmm. And I've seen both. And I just think that, you know, we have to match expectations of our children with performance. That they absolutely have to be a part of their own maturation and, you know, not just meet our expectations, but have those expectations internally accepted by them. So basically they need to know why that's important. They need to know why it's important to work, why it's important to study, why it's important to do the things that we all know are important for rites of passage, you know, maturation into a more mature and self-sufficient person.
Which is the major rite of passage to become an adult.
Which is the major rite of passage.
So there you are. At this point, we always want to leave our listeners with some shred of hope to be able to do something that will be positive. So what resources would you suggest for our listeners who want to learn more about the issues involved in our children's rites of passage?
One of the really nice book series that I've seen is the whole Chicken Soup series. One of the new ones is Chicken Soup for the Father's Soul, Stories to Open the Heart and Rekindle the Spirits of Fathers. I absolutely just see that in today's world, we're losing a lot of boys. And Laura Bush has an initiative out now concentrating on boys.
This is President Bush's wife.
Correct. Mm-hmm. I really think that it's important that we concentrate on that relationship with fathers and their children, not just boys, because fatherless girls meet many, many horrible outcomes as well, because they're out looking for love in all the wrong places and ways. If anyone's interested in a more scholarly look at some of the rites of passage data, there's a book called The Ritual of Early Modern Europe, which basically talks about European culture and its progression, by Edward Muir, M-U-I-R. For those interested in the whole fatherhood issue, there is a website, fatherhood.org, and that's the National Fatherhood Initiative. As I was doing my research, looking through several of the books on rites of passage, and by the way, the Google search brought up 11,600,000 hits on rites of passage.
Oh my goodness.
So
glad you
I'm in
down
no
in
way saying that I've looked at all of them, but one that seemed of reasonable interest was a book called Indigo Rising, by G.W. Hardin. He's the author. And it looks to be based on Native American rites of passage and plays to the fact that many religions, social groups, different peoples all over the world have spent many centuries on this issue.
Well, we are so pleased that Dr. Kevin Williams could join us for discussing rites of passage and help us understand this important issue. And we are very grateful for all of your insights and suggestions. So thank you so much for being with us today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and please spell anything that isn't obvious. That's very helpful to us. Mention show number 260 and tell us what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. We'd like to remind you about some important toll-free numbers for parents and kids. The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, 1-800-THE-LOST. That's 1-800-843-5678. And the other one is the National Runaway Switchboard, 1-800-621-4000. 1-800-621-4000. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.